Hello, my marketing and entrepreneur friends. Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Let's Talk Marketing podcast, where I, your host, Katya Allison, get to explore the latest techniques and trends and strategies of marketing. I am thrilled to introduce Emily Jane, my guest today, who is a branding expert at a boutique strategic communications agency. Now, she is passionate about helping businesses build authentic and creative brands that deeply resonate with their audiences. With years of experience in creative branding, marketing integration, and working with a variety of entrepreneurs and businesses, she's here to share her insights with you on how to craft a brand story that really speaks to your ideal customer. I think that's something that we're always trying to do. Now, we talk about how brands can tap into their creativity. This is a big one for this episode, tapping into their creativity to stand out in the crowded digital space. And Emily explains how to embrace creative communication across all of your marketing channels and the importance of authenticity. That's right, my favorite buzzword, in building a brand that truly connects. We also chat about the type of content that makes your brand magnetic online and how to embrace your creative superpower to drive long-term success. Now, her approach is really blending this creative energy with strategic marketing, and she's going to share some fantastic tips on how to leverage them both. If you're ready to push past the boundaries of conventional marketing and embrace your brand's true creativity, this episode is filled with inspiration and actionable advice. So put your capes on because we're going to be superheroes and get ready to unleash your superpower. Let's dive into it. Let's talk marketing. Emily Jane, welcome to the Let's Talk Marketing podcast. I'm very excited to have you on here today.
Thank you. I'm so looking forward to having a chat with you as well.
Yes. And today we're going to be talking about just kind of creativity and how that is something that we leverage for brand growth. But before we get to the nitty gritty, I like for my audience to get to know you a little bit. So let's start with our starter questions. I'd love to know, what was your first marketing role? Whether it had marketing in the title or it didn't, where did you get that marketing bug?
Yeah, so I actually come from an architecture background. So not even like, you know, having studied marketing or branding or anything like that traditionally. So I'd say like the first proper taste at marketing that I got was when I was in university and I decided to start a network marketing business. And that was like the first little dabble into the online space for me. And that was really like the first proper exposure I had to, I guess, online marketing in itself. But I did also grow up with a dad who's in business and a mum who had dabbled in business as well. So I had experienced observing marketing as, you know, a child, but like it was really at the age of 20 where, yeah, I dabbled in network marketing. And that was like the first real taste of being in a marketing role for myself.
And you got hooked there. So that's where you started. What are you currently doing?
So at the moment, I am a branding strategist and I have just launched a branding agency as well, which is my new project for this year. And so I'm predominantly working within the branding space, but also bringing that integration of marketing alongside what I do so that branding, you know, the branding of my clients is working synergistically with the marketing that obviously every business needs to be putting in place as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that for you. I'm obsessed with branding in general. I feel like the marketing organization is so wide that you can lean one way or the other, whether it's branding or like the growth marketing demand gen kind of area or lead gen kind of area. So we're definitely going to be talking about the areas that are close to my heart. Super excited about that. Now, about what you're currently doing, what is it that you love about what you're currently doing? But be mentally and emotionally prepared. I'm going to ask you what you don't love about it as well, too. So let's start with the good. What do you love about what you currently do?
It comes back to like that creative piece for me. Like I am such a creative, an artist at heart. And so I really love that branding like is essentially a form of art in itself and really allows me to exercise that creative muscle in multiple different ways, like obviously in a design capacity, but then also, you know, in when we think about like brand messages, you know, and doing that deeper almost theory work behind a brand, I find there's still a lot of creativity that gets to come through with that as well.
Oh, I absolutely agree. Which is probably why I'm so excited to talk about it, because I do think there is such a high level of creativity when it comes to marketing that it's really underrated, and not creativity only in like design, because I think that's where people naturally go is, oh, that's great. You create logos and like think and obsess about fonts. And maybe I do that as well too. But I also think there's a level of creative problem solving as well too. How do I get the message out, especially from a branding perspective? How can I position this? You are sculpting someone, or not someone, something, when you talk about like brand. And to me, that is also so, so creative. I love that. Now, like I said, I asked you what you love, but what, and we're not going to use the word hate because that's dramatic, but what, if anything, if I could pluck anything out of your day of what you're currently doing, what could we take off of your plate that you don't really care for?
This is a great question. I would probably say just where I'm at the moment, it's more of like a growth curve that's a bit uncomfortable for me, is where it's building out a team to help with the integration in the branding agency side of things, and really like having those conversations to figure out like, well, how much should I pay you for this role, and how should we structure this, and should there be a package? I'd say that is one aspect, which is kind of creating a little bit of friction at the moment because it is a bit of a new learning curve for me.
Yeah. And I feel like I have asked this question so many times, and it is pretty consistent with anybody that I get on here that is like a true marketer. It's this admin-y stuff. Like, get me to the nitty gritty. This is why I started. Yep. Because I think like so many things are consistently changing, and it's tough to keep up with all of those things as well too, which is also part of the creative part. So I'd love to know, how are you kind of staying up to date with all of the changes happening in digital marketing and like following different trends that are happening that are going to inform your strategy? How do you stay up to date?
Yeah, I feel like one level of this is, first of all, like managing myself and like regulating my own emotions, because, you know, as we know, like social media is always changing. I mean, we literally saw the other day TikTok got banned, and then like what, 12 hours later, it's back up and running again. And so like the first piece is like learning to regulate your own self and your own nervous system when it comes to like navigating these changes and these trends in the online space. And then I guess the other way that I navigate this is to just like be open to embracing change as well, you know, and get curious and getting excited about exploring like what is happening within the market space, and how can I jump on this in a way that is creative and fun and also going to ultimately be beneficial for my business.
Do you find that you kind of stay on top of those trends by just navigating social media, or is there like a newsletter, a podcast, a book, a key opinion leader that you also follow to help you?
I do follow like different people who inspire me when it comes to like, you know, the marketing that they deliver. But I would say largely like Instagram is the main platform that I'm on and that I really help my clients with as well. And so it's largely observation of what's going on Instagram. And I think the great thing about Instagram as well is like, as trends begin to surface within like, you know, the marketplace, thought leaders tend to start speaking on them. And so there's always new people that you can be learning from on the platform, you know, that you find you love the most. But yeah, for me, it's predominantly just observing what is happening. Also like being aware of who are the people who have the most control over the platforms as well. So I do follow Mosseri, who was Instagram's initial founder. Now I don't know what his role is compared to Mark Zuckerberg, but I find that is simply following his account, there's always updates on what's, you know, what new trends are going on within that social space and how to navigate it. So yeah, that could probably be one of the people that I could put out there to point your audience in the direction of.
Yeah, I also follow him as well too. I think he does such a great job at articulating the changes, and also because he's connected to the actual company itself, you almost feel like you get like the sneak peek of like this behind the scenes of what's coming up, kind of what's trending. I think for me, I also follow, I want to say there's a creator account that gives you like this weekly summary of like, you know, the trends that are happening, the hashtags, the sounds, because I do think, and sometimes I think it's a little controversial when we talk about just not just social media, but we talk about social media as a way to keep up with the trends, because I find that there are a lot of other marketers that just will like subscribe to a newsletter, right? They're like, okay, well, that's how I stay up to date with the trends. But I feel like they're all just kind of connected in general. Do you find that if you solely focus on just kind of getting your updates from social, not your updates, but like kind of watching the trends on social media, that you're missing out on anything else? Or do you think that they are just kind of connected in some way?
I think there definitely is a connection. I mean, my main focus goes on the platform that I'm most active in. But in saying that as well, like, you know, I've got a team member who really focuses on the email space. And so I also receive updates from her on like, you know, what's trending in that area in particular. So yeah, for me, I find it really helpful, like keeping my focus on the one platform that I'm managing the most, and then delegating eyes to be, you know, paying attention to other areas and feeding that information through to me. You know, like you mentioned before we even started this call, there's so much information we have access to all the time that I think it really helps me to be able to focus in on my zone of genius, to just know this is where my eyes are and this is where my attention is. And then I've also got eyes in other areas that are finding necessary information for me over there.
Oh, I think that's so key, especially as a business owner as well too. You don't have to be the person that does all the things or the person that knows all of the things too. Good on you. Good on you to be like a delegator as well too, because I think that makes such a difference and it makes your life so much easier as well too. You can let it go. That does nothing to do with ego. Well, I'm ready to dive into just kind of like the creative and like brand and brand growth and how we do all of those things. But I would like to start with more of a broad question. I'd like to know, why do you believe that creativity is such a superpower in branding and marketing?
Oh, I love this question. When I think of creativity, what I think of is creating something out of nothing. And the reason why I feel that's such a superpower in the branding and marketing space is because there's so many people who are creating something by copying someone else, right? Yeah. And not enough people really standing in their power as a creator and being the one to create something out of nothing. So that really is what allows you to become the thought leader. It allows you to stand out above the crowd. And instead of being a watered down version of someone else, it allows you to create content or a brand that is just so bold and potent that it becomes magnetic to your ideal clients.
I'm sold. But how can I tap into that power? Because I think that it's not for lack of desire that maybe some brands want to. It's more of, I don't know if they're scared. Well, I think it, I'll call it out. I think that some brands are a little scared because it's your business on the line. So kind of what are your thoughts on how a brand can tap into creativity in a safe, quote unquote, way so that they feel a little bit more comfortable? Or maybe there's no such thing as being comfortable if you're trying to be creative and you're trying to push the boundaries.
Yeah, I love that. So the first thing I want to touch on in this, and I'm going to speak in, you know, specifically to personal brands here, and like, you know, the individuals behind the personal brands. When we think about, you know, building a personal brand on social media, particularly if there's people in our audience that are, you know, in the earlier stages of that, one of the biggest things that I see blocking new entrepreneurs from really tapping into their creativity when building their brand is the fact that they're so heavily in their masculine head. Now, we've obviously got two sides of the brain. One is very logical, and the one is more creative. And then these sides of the brain also really correlate with that feminine and that masculine energy, right? Where the feminine is very creative and the masculine energy is very logical. Now, let's say, for example, you're working your 9-to-5 job, you're in your logical mind all day, you come home, okay. You sit down at the computer and say, okay, I need to now create some content. But you're hitting like this brick wall of like, I just don't know what to create. I have no inspiration. Like, and you're feeling that slump. That's because of the state of mind that you're in when you're going to do something of like, when you're going to create something, you're stuck in that logical head still. And so in order to actually tap into your creativity more, you need to create a conscious shift for you to actually step out of that logical go, 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 hustle, hustle, hustle mentality and step into that feminine, that creative mindset, so that then you can actually start to think expansively and think outside of the box of what everyone else is doing on social media. And so that really starts by creating little routines or rituals or transition windows, I like to call it, to actually allow you to switch between those states. So that would be the biggest reason why people struggle with their creativity, is because they're not actually, they don't know how to actually get into that creative energy, or necessarily don't realize how deep into that masculine, you know, go, 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 hustle kind of state they are, that logical way of thinking, and how that's blocking them from thinking outside the box and really getting into that art of creation.
How do you coach brands and people to get into that creative space? Because, you know, when I am looking for a new team member, and especially in like the content and creative side of things, one of the questions that I always ask is, how do you get into the creative space? Because wouldn't it be nice if it was just a switch? So I'm kind of asking you the same thing. Like, how do you coach that out of brands and people?
Yeah, I mean, there's two options, right? The first option is if you're not super creative and you don't necessarily want to have to put yourself in that switch state, then delegate, right? Hire someone who is more naturally in their creative and finds that way of thinking a lot more easier. You don't have to, you know, I think there was this like saying where, you know, we're really encouraged to work on our weaknesses. But in business, you really don't have to work on your weaknesses. You can focus on your strengths and you can hire out your weaknesses. So that is the first option there. The second option, though, for the person who is like, no, I really want to get into my creative mind so that I can be the one who can think creatively for my brand or my personal brand, then what I would really encourage you to do is start to explore and start to figure out, well, what are different activities that allow you to get into that creative state? Now, for some, for women in particular, that might be dancing, you know, like, and actually getting yourself moving, flowing your body. You know, it could be something as simple as going for a walk out in nature, you know, to kind of like slow down. It could be a meditation, right? And really, I want you to think about creativity as a practice. It's not going to be something from the get-go that you're going to have a full handle on if it's quite foreign to you. But the more you practice that skill and you practice that building that muscle of your creative mind, the easier it becomes. But it really starts by finding those little things that allow you to feel more creative. And yes, as women, like, that's very much things that allow us to be in that state of flow, you know? So maybe listening to some music. Maybe it's having sex with your partner is what walks you out of, you know, that masculine state, whatever it is, like coming up with exploring and finding different things that you can test and see what really helps you shift that state so that you can then leverage that more when you're wanting to tap into your creativity. But I would also say a very, very big thing is creating scheduled time and intentionally blocking your calendar to support you to be in your creative for that time that you've set. So for example, I wouldn't schedule to do creative activities on days where I'm doing sales calls, because days when I'm doing sales calls, I'm in a very masculine headspace where I'm like focused on this set task, focused on closing a sale. That's quite the opposite of that flowy, that creative, that soft energy I need for creation. So for me, my Mondays tend to be that day where it's a no sales call day, no client call day. And I basically just have that day intentionally for teamwork and creative work.
I love that. And, you know, I interviewed a couple of people also who had mentioned this getting into the state of flow. And one of the things that they had brought up was, and now I literally leverage this podcast to stay up to date with everything. And I get all of these little insights from it as well, too. But one of the things that they pointed out is that it, like, scientifically proven that it takes 23 minutes to dive into something, right? To, like, really start to. So don't expect it, like, as soon as you sit down, which is, I have found that since that has been introduced to my life, and I've told literally everyone in my house about this, is I put a timer for 23 minutes because I think, okay, if I haven't gotten it into anything into 23 minutes, then, well, at least I have I've tried to do something for 23 minutes and I've done it. But second, I can move on from something else, right? Like, so that it's not this kind of forced time. But I also want to point out one of the things that you said was the intention of it, right? Mm-hmm. It is blocking that time. If you are not a morning person, I would say don't try to be creative in the morning.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I think some people really try to force it. They're like, okay, let's do this.
No, definitely. You need to have a good understanding of yourself. And that's why I'm like, trial and error, right? Because you might not know if you're not a morning creative person yet, if you haven't tried it. So give yourself a to try and then take a look and actually assess, how did that feel? How did that go? Were you productive? Did you get what you needed? Like, did you get the outcome you desired? And if not, then pivot and figure out, okay, well, what can I test next? One thing I will add that popped into my mind as you were talking about the 23-minute rule is to remove distractions, because having distractions, especially having your phone near you when you're trying to get into a creative state, is going to be constantly breaking you out of that, right? So you really got to look at all of these different elements and start to see, what do I need to remove in order to allow me to tap into my creativity more. And, you know, when I create artwork, sometimes I've gone into this little like ritual now where I find, okay, sometimes I want to create some art, but, like, you know, I've been in a very masculine headspace, you know, running my business, doing all of this. How do I help myself transition to get that creative inspiration to create a piece of art? And even finding like little rituals for yourself. Like for me, I've got a deck of, what are they called? Those cards, they're not tarot cards, the oracle cards. I got a deck of oracle cards and I will forgot the word for some reason, and I'll shuffle them and I'll pull out a couple of the cards and I'll just look at the artwork that's on those cards and like the meaning behind those cards to help inspire like what it is now I want to create on that piece of paper. So you can even find little things that might help you. Maybe it's music, maybe it's movement, maybe it's something else. Maybe it's as simple as, you know, doing a little card pull for yourself to really help, you know, get that creativity starting to flow.
Now, you've just talked about how you as an individual can get into the creative state. And I know that you had intended to focus on that, but I also think like that speaks to an entire marketing team as well, too, because you're all individuals, but even every individual on that team, getting them in that creative space and almost identifying like this Venn diagram of where do we all overlap as a team? And like, that's where we as a team can now be creative together. Mm. Now, I'm curious, in the brands that you've worked with, do you have any examples of if you don't, it's totally okay. But I'm kind of wondering, I'd love for people to hear the difference between a creative brand and a non-creative brand, right? Like, how do we elevate this? What comes to mind is, I see always these videos of like how you can elevate an ordinary outfit, like with, you know, wearing jewelry or wearing a belt or whatever it is. I'm kind of wondering if you have an example of that from a brand perspective.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what's coming up for me, I don't know if this is like the kind of example that you're looking for, but what's coming up for me and what I've been able to notice in different clients that I've worked with is what, you know, separates a creative brand from a non-creative brand is the depth of understanding the brand has of their ideal client. And what I mean by this is the most creative brands understand their ideal client in the most detailed and intricate ways that they are able to create connections, you know, connect the dots between things that maybe don't even seem to have a connection, and then position that as, you know, creative messaging that they put out in their marketing or they put out in their content. And so this is where, like, your depth of understanding that you have of your ideal client, or even the depth of understanding you have around the niche you're in, and, you know, that expertise that you have, is the thing that's going to allow you to become even more creative when it comes to connecting the dots and producing marketing that, you know, is basically taking one thing that seemingly is completely unrelated to what you do, yeah, and actually creating a story to tie it in and make them perfectly interconnect.
That is such a great articulation, and kind of speaks to what I'm going to piggyback on it, because it was going to be a question, but it was the question was really going to be, is creativity, is that equal to cleverness? Right. And I think sometimes people think that, like, it has to be kind of clever and cheeky, mm-hmm, but it doesn't. What you're describing to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but what you're describing to me is truly, like you said, understanding your audience. And because you understand it, you get the connections that are going to resonate with them, and a creative way to articulate that you get it is what you're talking about when it comes to creativity, not just like a cheeky cleverness. But yeah, correct me if I'm wrong. If you think it's cheeky, let me know.
No, I definitely think that there's an element of cheekiness to it, but creativity is its own form of intelligence. You know, like, we, yeah, if you think about going through school and, like, you know, the kind of intelligence that they put on a pedestal is straight A's in math, straight A's in science, straight A's in biology, like, you know, more of those logical minded subjects. Now, that is a very high form of intelligence, but the creative intelligence is equal to that. Even though maybe in schools it wasn't positioned that way, to be able to think creatively is the same, mm-hmm, as being able to, you know, piece together chemical compounds to create something else in science. And so, yeah, I think for sure, as you're saying, like, creativity is like an intelligent act. And you know, you don't need to feed yourself this limiting belief of, oh, I'm not intelligent in the traditional ways that are put on the pedestal in schooling. That doesn't take away from the intelligence that you actually do have within you when it comes to creativity. And again, it's like a thing that you learn how to connect those dots, you learn how to piece together those puzzles, and you learn how to think at a higher level with your creative mind as well.
Now, you've worked with a lot of different brands at various stages of their growth, from startups to, you know, well-established businesses. I'm curious, do you find that one over the other has more of a challenge tapping into just kind of that creative mind for their brand? Or do you think it's kind of like been the same overall?
Yeah, I feel like it's the same problem at a different level. You know, like, mm-hmm, when someone's brand new to the business space and it's the very first time that they're tapping into branding and that creativity, you know, it's like a clean slate. They don't know anything yet. And then there's this learning curve of having to learn that skill. But then when it comes to a higher level of client, you know, they've gone through those foundation steps before, but at some point, like, they've come back to that square one, whether it's like, you know, a new pivot that's happening in their business. And now they again feel lost with that way of thinking and that lost in that way of connecting the dots because of that change that comes with that new level that they're wanting to step into. So essentially, like, I would say it's like very similar, the problems that arise, but just at different levels in the journey.
That makes sense. That makes complete sense. And that's what I had assumed that you would say as well too, because it is something that you have to be able to tap into, and it is just different, right? Like, you, mm-hmm, can have more people in a well-established versus a startup, and where they are from a brand growth perspective is very different. Do you find that either people or brands have to or maybe struggle with, maybe they don't, with balancing creativity and authenticity, right? Like, I want to get into this creative space, but I want to also be authentically me, but I also want to make sure I'm creating this brand. How do we balance? What's your advice for balancing all of this as a brand, like individual, like a personal brand, mm-hmm. and a business brand? Like, do you think that there is like this kind of, who am I? Like this identity loss a little bit when you really want to attempt to be more creative in what you're doing?
I think that's a great question. And my answer to that would probably be a bit simple. And it's probably just checking in with yourself and asking, is this authentic to me? You know, like give yourself, because I'm a big believer that your personal branding is an initiation to a higher level of self, which means it's the art of creating that next level, the art of designing what that new version of yourself looks like. And if that's a version of yourself that you are not right now, then yeah, that's probably going to seem a bit different. And maybe even wonder, like, is this person that I'm wanting to step into and become, like, is this truly me? Like, is this truly authentic to me? Or is this what I think I should be doing? And so I really feel it just comes back to asking that question of when you have that creative insight that comes through and that inspiration to step into something that's different to what you've been doing, just ask yourself, does this feel authentic to me and where I want to be going? It doesn't need to be 100% authentic to who you are right now, because who you are right now isn't the version of yourself who is at that next level. So is this 100%, or does this feel authentic to the version of myself that I am becoming? And if the answer to that is yes, then embrace that opportunity to explore something new.
Ah, I love that. Well, because I do think it's so inspirational. And, you know, and like I said, we keep talking about like the personal brand, but I do think all of these elements feed into a business's brand, because you're made up of individuals and you have to be able to go out there and be yourself as a brand, be yourself as a person as well too. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. I also feel like when you do that, when you insert this creative intelligence in your brand, I think that you naturally grow because people see that, your audience sees it, right? Your audience sees it and that's what they're reacting to. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So the question was, sorry, when you're, could you repeat the question one more time for me?
Yeah, no problem. No problem. Well, I asked it in a very roundabout way. I'm sure that I could be more articulate with it. You're like, where did you go? So like when you are being authentically you and you've tapped into your kind of creative intelligence, that your brand is going to naturally grow. And my question to you is, my hypothesis is that part of the reason of that brand growth is because your audience really resonates with that. Yeah. They are getting it. And that's why it feeds into brand growth. And I wanted to know if you also felt that same way about my hypothesis.
Yes, I love that. And I definitely agree with that in one capacity, where like that feedback from your audience is, you know, obviously a sign that they're really aligning and they're really vibing with that direction you're stepping into. But then I would also put out there and say that it's not a negative thing if your audience doesn't respond positively, or if you start to lose followers with a change. Because sometimes you can go through like a bit of a pivot where you're like, okay, what I've been doing is no longer authentic to me. This is the new direction, which now feels more authentic to me. But the entire audience you built was in alignment with that previous version of brand or self, right? And so just because you may be pivoting and then people may not like this pivot or resonate with this pivot as much, does not mean that that is feedback that it is not right. All that means is it's feedback that the current audience you have might not be 100% aligned with that direction that you're going in. And then you've got to ask yourself the question of, okay, well, if this is the direction I want to go, am I okay with letting go of people and followers who are no longer aligned with where I'm going now? It's kind of like when you go through like some growth spurts on a personal level, all of a sudden you're not, you know, you still love your friends, but some of those friends aren't fully in alignment with where you're going, and then you start to part ways. Well, that can be the same thing that happens. So yes, I definitely agree with what you're saying, but then would also say, don't just take the feedback of, you know, your audience not liking the direction or your audience unfollowing you, like, as a sign that what you're stepping into isn't authentic to you, because that could just be a sign that that audience that you previously were speaking to is no longer aligned with the new audience you're wanting to call in.
Oh, I couldn't have said that any better. It, like, some people are really just meant to be chapters, not the whole story. And some people are completely separate books, but that's for another podcast on another day. I'd also like to know, just kind of looking ahead, as we're talking about what I'm going to call is just kind of creative marketing, as we're looking ahead, what kind of things do you think that us as marketers should be keeping our eye on as we step into 2025?
This is an interesting question. What should we as marketers be keeping our eye on as we step into 2025? Well, yeah. One thing that I'm paying a lot of attention to myself is the way that people are consuming social media. And I think that's something that we always need to be paying attention on, whether it's, you know, on a monthly basis, on a yearly basis, whatever that may be, because the way that the individuals like consume on platforms is then going to massively influence the success that, you know, your marketing and your content actually sees. And so without paying attention to that, this year in particular, like, as there's all these big shifts that are going on with, you know, the TikTok platform, still uncertainty about exactly what that's going to look like, and then that, how that is going to influence the way people consume on other platforms such as Instagram or email marketing, right? It's so important to have that awareness around how users are consuming on platforms and what's influencing the way that they're consuming as well, so that then you can make sure that you're meeting them where they're at when it comes to the kind of marketing that you're producing.
I couldn't agree more. I love this. I could probably talk to you for hours, but alas, we've come to the end, and I have my final question for you. And my final question is, if you knew then what you know now, what is the marketing or non-marketing dealer's choice? Well, actually, that would be me. Your choice. What is the marketing or non-marketing advice that you would give to yourself?
Honestly, it always comes back to just like standing in your power, you know, and I think this can really apply in a marketing sense and also in a non-marketing sense. But when it comes to a marketing sense, it's like standing in your power, speaking your voice, owning your truth, not hiding it or softening like who you are because you're scared of judgment or you're scared of, you know, being rejected because someone else doesn't agree with the opinion that you have. Stand in your power and allow yourself to be loud and proud in however form that may look online for you, so that you can actually have the best opportunity possible to attract in the people you want to attract and really become a thought leader in the space that you're in.
Love it. Standing in our power is exactly what we will do. I cannot thank you enough for coming on here and just sharing your thoughts and your insights. And I know it's early for you, so I really appreciate you coming on here.
Thank you. It was so much fun. I appreciate it.
I hope that you found Emily Jane's episode just as insightful as I did. I'm going to jump right into my key takeaways. They kind of all build into one another. My first key takeaway, emotional intelligence for the win. So we got into the role of emotional intelligence in marketing, which is basically your ability to recognize and understand emotions in ourselves and in others, and use this awareness to just kind of manage our behaviors and relationships a little bit more effectively, which honestly is just a really wordy way of saying that it's reading the room with your emotions and using those emotions to better connect. I think that for a brand that has or exhibits emotional intelligence, it means being very in tune with your prospects and your customers that you engage with. As a marketer, it helps you craft the right messages and products that really speak to them. Have you ever talked to a friend that just kind of gets it without requiring you to do all of this heavy lifting of explaining. Aren't those the best friends? That's kind of that feeling and what you want to do as a brand as well too. Now, Emily's thoughts are that kind of using emotional intelligence and marketing efforts allows us to connect on a deeper level, creating campaigns that are not only seen, but felt. Understanding the emotional vibes of your audience can really transform a regular campaign into an impactful story that speaks directly to them. It's a value-first marketing when you attack campaigns with emotional intelligence. All right, key takeaway number two, personalization through real stories. There is something about telling real personal stories that can really breathe life into a brand. Think about it like this. Every brand has a story, much like every person has a story. By sharing these, whether they're about hurdles a customer has overcome or behind the scenes, look at how your product is made. A brand stops being just a business. It starts to feel like a friend. Now, before you come at me in the comments, I'm not saying you have to be someone's best friend in order to connect and sell, but you do have to show that you understand. And a great way to do that is through stories. They build trust. They also have that emotional connection right away. It's that hook. And if you're listening thinking, I don't always have a story that I can share, keep in mind, it doesn't actually have to be your story. I think traditionally with content marketing and storytelling, we think of them as case studies. And while sales love themselves some good case studies, I'm an even bigger fan of customer stories. It's a bit of influencer marketing meets community, whether you're D2C or B2B. You're going to be really hard pressed for this not to work, to share stories. We're all human after all. So show me what other people are doing. Show me what challenges other people have. How are they solving them? Can I ask them a question too? Be an advocate for your customers and amplify their stories while creating also a sense of community. This in marketing means we're talking to people, not at them. Invite your audience into a shared journey, turning them from mere viewers into active participants. My final key takeaway is innovation equals creativity. It's not just about making your brand stand out. It is about making it memorable in this kind of sea of sameness. And to do that, you have to be creative. We can definitely take inspiration from others. Don't get me wrong. We all borrow from each other at some point. I'm talking about the catalyst to innovation is being creative, living in creativity. Well, that was a tongue twister, but you're picking up what I'm putting down. It's like the spice in a dish. Without it, you might satisfy basic needs, but with it, you create an experience that really keeps people coming back for more. This pairs very nicely with emotional intelligence, right? And also that personalization through storytelling, showing that there is a true method to my madness when it comes to these key takeaways. I did say it at the top. They all kind of build on one another. This is the way that I like to think about it. So fun fact, I'm short, 5'2", to be exact, although my personality is that of someone who's more like 6'2". I am a short person in a tall world. I never reach the top shelf without a step stool, right? But let's say I don't have one handy, but I got to get to the top of the shelf and I'm very motivated. So let's pretend that there's a wine bottle there. No step stool. Does that mean I give up? Oh, well, I will never drink wine again. Okay, don't be ridiculous. That's not going to happen. But this is where we can get creative to solve a problem. And through that, we can come up with something really innovative. Is it rotating shelves? An extension arm that's just for wine bottles? A travel step stool? You get the point. And while I know this may not seem like it relates to marketing, I promise it does. What challenges are you addressing as a brand? Put those at the forefront instead of leading with your product. Pair that with a little bit of creativity And all of a sudden, you're creating an innovative marketing campaign. If you are in tune with your audience and understand their challenges, their problems are your problems. Scary, right? But truly, if it's your challenge also to solve, you'll figure it out, but you gotta be creative. Now, what were your takeaways from today's episode? I wanna hear it. A special thank you to my podcast editor, Johnny Ike, and a special thank you to you for spending your time with me today. Until next time, may the conversation flow, the laughter linger, and the outlook remain optimistic but grounded in reality. This is Katya, signing off.